So it's my pleasure to welcome to Many Rivers, to the Thursdays at Many Rivers series at Many Rivers, because Gobin, our speaker tonight, has visited the store before, but he has not spoken in the series before. But it's my pleasure to welcome him to this space. I've long been intrigued about his practice and what he's up to. We get to ask questions, assuming that he follows the format that I'm expecting. So please join me in welcoming Gobin Singh Khalsa to Many Rivers Books and Tea.
Well, I don't want to disappoint you, so hopefully you didn't bring any too many expectations. I guess where to begin? You know, I made this a very informal kind of connection where you can ask questions. But I would like to start with introducing myself and a little bit about who I am and why I'm a yogi. And then I thought we'd do a meditation, if that's all right with you. And then we can talk a little bit and we'll see where it goes from there. That sound good for you?
Yeah.
All right, so my name is Gobin Singh Khalsa. I was not born with this name. I was given this name. I am a practicing Sikh, a Guru Sikh. So that Sikh means student. Sikh is actually the correct pronunciation. And a Guru Sikh is one who studies the teachings of the Guru. In our tradition, there was 10 living gurus, and then the Sri Guru Granth Sahib, which is our current living guru. I'm also a yogi, which means one who leans his consciousness on the infinite consciousness, and one who is absorbed in that. And that practice I started with was practicing yoga, many different styles of yoga, which are helpful to kind of set the body and the mind so you can experience the state of yoga, which is balancing the body, mind, and spirit so you experience that infinite within you and within all. I want to say that the journey that I have been on, like everybody goes on a journey, has been the most fun and exciting and challenging one. And if you study the mystics and look in between the lines in the teachings, what they sometimes will tell you and sometimes they don't is that the journey itself is one that is loaded with pitfalls and traps. And what does that mean? That means that your mind is like one of the most powerful things that exists in all of the planet, in all of the hemispheres, in every dimension, and that it has ability to play tricks on you. And what do I mean by that? Well, part of you is absorbed in the reality of deep truth, profound wisdom. Always there's a droplet of that in you, whether you're aware of it or not. And then another part of you, which is your subconscious, is the filter from what you live through and how you experience your life based upon your nervous system and based upon your karmas and your mother and all that stuff. And the filter that you go through, that you live through, significantly impacts the experiences that come to you, as well as significantly impacts your experience on this planet. And the practice of yoga and the practice of meditation, in my experience, is to balance the body and mind so you can clean those filters out, so you can have a deeper, more vast experience of what is truth or what is real. And you know, I say, well, I know what's real. You know, this carpet's real. You know, gym is real, and this is a real bookstore and all that. But there's an underlying current that can't be seen by the naked eye unless you're very well trained and it's practiced over time. And there's an underlying reality which is sometimes experienced and sometimes not. And that is that, well, we're not really separate. We're not really apart. And that underlying experience is masked by the subconscious and the illusions that happen on a daily basis. What do I mean? You get up out of bed, you walk down, and you see John walking down the street, and there's John. John's hair is this color and whatever. That person is separate from me. That state of existence is normal. in the yogic way of being, John is no different from Mary and Paul and Susie, because there is really no separation between you. And the practice of a yogi is to eliminate the duality and the differences so you can see the true reality and relate to that part of you on a daily basis. So, and that pitfalls of it is that you've been programmed since even before you were born to not see that clearly. So I want to teach you a meditation. There's thousands and thousands of meditations, but just a very simple one that can help you open up your sensory system. Now, the self-sensory system is something that Yogi Bhajan, one of my primary teachers, taught, is the way that you perceive everything comes in through what some will call the self. Now, in certain traditions, the self doesn't exist, and there is something that's beyond the self. But the reality is that you're here having an experience. And the self-sensory system is your ability to relate and feel and express and understand and be fulfilled. And when I say fulfilled, meaning I feel really good and complete just the way I am, just the way I am right here. And that development of that awareness helps your intuition, helps you be more successful when you live, because intuitively, when you make choices that are in alignment with that intuition, that divine part of you, the easier life is. And maybe my definition of easy might be not the same as your definition of easy, because everybody has things that come to them and they're not always pleasant. But easier in the sense that you're burning off those karmas and you're actually absorbed in that reality, which is the most profound, peaceful, incredible thing that I've ever experienced. So what I want you to do is straighten your spine, get your feet on the ground, and I want you to just close your eyes, and you know, your attention is, you know, maybe 80 or 90% listening to me. I want you to start to bring that attention deeper inside of yourself. And just close your eyes and feel your sit bones sitting on the chair and see if you can straighten your spine. And when I say straighten your spine, what I want you to do is kind of tuck your tailbone and lengthen the spine through the top of the head and stick your chest out a little bit, almost like you're engaging your heart, and then tuck your chin in. All right? And then now all this direction, I want you to try and relax in this and let go of it being perfect and allow your spine to just settle into a natural position. Keeping the eyes closed, take a deep inhale through the nose, inhale, and exhale. Now, yogic breathing is simple, yet to many people it's backwards. Inhaling yogically, you're going to inhale almost like you're blowing up a balloon. You're inhaling into your belly, into your lower back, into your chest and your shoulders, and you're actually expanding your physical body. I know we want to tap into the subtle realms, but I want you to really get into your physical body where you're breathing long and deep and feeling your body. The body is your vehicle for human experience. So feel your body, and as you inhale, stretch those lungs. Inhale deeply, expand your belly. And when you exhale, you pull the navel in. Comes in towards the base of the spine and then slightly up towards the heart. Now this is natural breathing. Many people have what's called reverse breathing, where you inhale, you're sucking in your stomach. You exhale and your belly kind of pops out. So conscious breathing helps you shift some of the unconscious and subconscious patterns. So just breathe long and deep. The other thing that breath does is it carries messages to the brain. Well, guess what? When you carry messages into the brain, then you can be more consciously aware, because there's more frequencies, more vibrational frequencies that are hitting those upper chakras. And that's where your intuition is, between the eyes. So now when I want you to open your eyes, this time I want you to look at me with kind, loving thoughts of greatness and sweetness, and all that good stuff. But when you look at me, keep a lot of that attention within yourself. So you can see me, but you're also being more present within you, feeling your body, feeling yourself. Now, yogically, you can play a game with your attention, right? When you put all your attention in the world, you can be absorbed into the world, in the world of Maya, illusion, and you don't quite get why people aren't being nice to you, and why, you know, the dog did this. But when you actually bring your attention in more, you can be present in the world, but you're not so absorbed in it. So you're with me, but you're also present within. Now, you're all experienced meditators, so I don't need to tell you any more of this. So I want you to take your fingers and stick your index finger straight up and curl your other three fingers and your thumb over down. And then the arms are going to come close against the elbows. The elbows are going to come close against the sides. And now I want you to squeeze the shoulder blades together. Good. This is going to engage your heart. Again, relax and put a yogic smile on. So just kind of soften your face. And then I want you to bring your attention to the tip of your nose. This is called the drishti, or focus point. So if you can't see the tip of your nose, that's okay. Just pretend you can, and, you know, don't do this. Just focus at the tip of the nose and breathe long and deep. Good. Now just focus on your breath. And allow yourself to settle into your body. Keep the angles so that the fingers are pointing straight up and breathing long and deep. If the mind starts arguing or fighting, then instruct your mind to focus. Focusing at the tip of the nose. The tip of the nose, when you look at the tip of the nose, there's these different points. We call them drishtis. A drishti is a focal point. When you focus at the tip of the nose, it encourages your third eye to open, and it helps rejuvenate your physical body, because your mind, which usually is all over the place, is now focusing on an energy center that stimulates the brain, and that helps bring energy into the body. Now I want you to focus in on your openness, relaxing in the room, keeping your focus, your eye focus on the tip of the nose. Allow yourself to just breathe and relax and just be open and receptive. Don't worry, this isn't a hypnotic. I'm not going to have you rob a bank or anything. But receptive in the context of just allowing yourself to be open. The discipline is focusing at the third eye point, using the drishti at the tip of the nose. But the openness, the receptivity, gives you the ability to sense and feel and know beyond what is known. And you have five senses in the physical body, and then you have a sixth sense, which is made up of the subtle body and your intuitive third eye. So tapping into that world is really a matter of 2.5 feet. The energy from the navel, which is your I am, by using the drishti, can work its way up. In Kundalini Yoga, we talk about this energy. Here, This is allowing yourself to relax into what's right here. Breath is long and deep, so I want you to really focus on the breath. And as you exhale, pull the navel in and breathe. Just allow yourself to notice. If your mind is fighting you, then just tell it it'll be over in a short period of time. Success in life is based upon a few simple things. One of those is your focus. Another is your attitude. A third is Dharma. Relax the hands down into your lap, and this time interlace them. Now for males, I want you to just take your right thumb over the left thumb, and for females, the left thumb over the right thumb, and I'll explain that. And just relax your hands down in your lap. Your hands are positioned, hand positioning is what we call mudra. Famous mudras are the Gyan mudra, where you see a Buddha or another teacher holding the hand up. You can open your eyes and look at me if you like. So this is Gyan mudra. This is a Venus lock. Now the right brain and left brain for women work much better than men. And when we put our hands together, it balances the two hemispheres. And it encourages the energy to come up the spine. Mind wanders, bring it back to the breath. Many practices use with mantras to help the mind focus and help to shift the energy that's present within you. In my practice, there's several, many actually, but we use one very common one is Sat Nam. And Sat means truth. Nam means identity. And so if your mind is all active and wandering, you can use a mantra like Sat Nam, just mentally repeating it in the mind. And that helps to clear the subconscious and plant the seed. A bead is a seed. And that seed is to bear fruit in the future. So it's to clear the mind so you can remember the truth within you, the true identity which is within you. So I created this format for dialogue, and we're having this listening to me just because I like to talk. No, just kidding. because I want you to help just be present and be settled. And meditation actually is the practice of knowing what is true. And the practices help you to bring that consciousness into your daily life. And we'll have some questions, and I want to encourage you to ask what you truly would like to know, like in any realm, and perhaps there'll be some intuitive, intelligent answer, or not. So, if you have any questions, and you could change your hand grip if you want, and if you can't think of a question, try Dhyan Mudra.
What mudra is this?
It doesn't have a name.
Okay.
This finger is called the Jupiter finger. Mm-hmm. Jupiter brings this blissful, wise energy. And when you point them up towards the heavens, it helps connect your circuits of your brain. And the posture itself actually helps your nervous system to stabilize. Mm-hmm. You're always all over the place, but this kind of a disciplined thing. Believe it or not, when you squeeze your elbows together, it actually engages and opens the heart center. And the fingers draw, it's almost like an antenna, draws energy into the Jupiter. And the Jupiter is just like blissful greatness. Good question. What's the practice when you just sit until something arises? And the Quakers.
Yeah. It's called waiting worship in the Quaker tradition.
So we'll wait. Yes.
Once. I was a little bit late, and when I walked in, you were saying, I think,
could you
approximately
speak louder?
You were approximately saying something like the key to success in life is focus.
One of the keys.
And here's where I lost my focus. You said something else too. That's the first part of the question.
You lost my focus? You lost your focus when I was speaking.
Yeah, because I don't remember the second thing you said.
Well, there you go. You have to pay attention.
Well, maybe, but here's... So I'll skip to the second part of the question.
The challenge in life, let me answer the first part of the question.
Okay.
The challenge in life is for your ability to stay focused no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you'll hear things and sometimes you won't.
Focused on what? It's the question that hadn't occurred to me.
That's a great question. So, it's true what you focus on is... something you're creating. So I guess you have to decide what your destination is. In the spiritual practices, in the traditions and teachings that I've learned, a lot of those focuses are on eliminating the things that create illusion and seeing what is true, what is real. And, you know, Yogi Bhajan said, you know, all these practices are so you can see the God in all. You know, so when you can see the God in all, then there's nothing else. But if you think about that, what's the focus in that teaching?
That sounds like when you ask what's the focus, I mean, it seems like the dropping of a pebble that hits the surface and keeps going down and down and down, because sometimes it needs to go really deep before you can see.
But the focus is the same, though.
Focus is the same.
There's different practices.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching a practice where you focus on the tip of the nose. That opens up the third eye and it helps energize the system. Now, many practices, meditation practices, you actually focus between the eyebrows. Right? That's another drishti. There are other drishtis at the top of the head, the chin, could be another focus point. But the point is, when you're doing these practices, you're retraining the mind, and you're actually stimulating the optic nerve and stimulating the different energy centers, different brain centers. All those focuses are still for the same thing. So you could be present, you can be here, and you can see what is real. All right, so the practices of focus help you to stabilize your energy field, right? Because when you're in the world, your energy can get depleted. Your nervous system can get out of whack. You need to take a cold shower, splash some water in your face, get away from the computer, eat a banana. Like, all those things are related to your nervous system, all right? When you're focused, right, that need dissipates. But if you use technology, you still have to make these transitions, because certain types of technologies will deplete your energy field. So you have to rebuild those. Focus does that.
The relationship of focus with the unconscious, since so much of what goes on in us is unconscious. So what would be your comments? I mean, sometimes I feel like practices that create a calm, focused place are great, but sometimes my experience then there's some other stuff that's hidden down there.
Like what?
Ready to get you. Mostly varieties of fear.
Okay.
And anger, you know. And sometimes just blind spots. You may not know. So you've been doing this discipline how long?
Which one?
Yogi Bhajan's practices and anything before that.
20+ years.
Okay. Just want to get that.
I've been practicing yoga for about 22 years.
Uh-huh.
So I think to get to the root of your question, it's like, how do I get to what really needs to happen, right? When you meditate, right, you clear your subconscious. You can move past your fears. When you have a fear, you can't sense and know reality. They don't exist in the same spot. So if you're unaware that you're afraid, by being focused, you become aware that you're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that's not good enough. You still have to change. You still have to change the fear. If the fear exists, then you don't have what you need to exist as a happy, fulfilled being. There's a degree of separation, there's a degree of attachment. Those create pain and suffering. So when you're focused, what do you want to have occur? That's really like a karmic kind of thing. You want to choose karma, you want to choose dharma. Like in my practice, my spiritual practice, we have a way of living. It's a value system that we live. So I take my intellect out of it. Let God decide. I choose to follow the discipline. In that context, I give my head to the teachings and I live through my heart. And in that way, it's not up to me anymore. If I'm going to fail here, that's going to be God's fault, not mine. And if you don't believe in God, it's fine. It's the same thing.
I'm confused about focus. After all that, no, I mean, focus to me is like putting my attention.
That's right.
Yeah. So if I'm putting my attention into the God and everybody around me, I get sidelined, you know.
From what?
From seeing the God in those people around me. My focus is to see the God in those around me.
That's beautiful.
Yes. But for me, it's really hard to do because they have, people have quirks. They
overlook them.
So what does it mean to focus on God around me? What the focus is on their aura, their energy, their
how about their
third eye, their end of their nose, or what?
How about the most incredible uniqueness that they are?
Very vague, darling.
I'll be more specific. Serve them. If you serve someone, you can know the infinite.
Okay.
That way, it's by experience. It's not an intellectual conversation. Right? Because the problem is that this is a very intellectual group where it's festival. Very smart. We like being smart. The intellect actually prevents you from experiencing all that there is. Why? It's a mental conversation. It's a mental activity. But your focus is on serving the infinite in those people that you're relating to, then it takes away some of that tension that you're thinking of this and that. The other thing is, Yogi Bhajan taught this, there are certain sutras that he said are really prevalent in this time, because there's a lot of stuff. The one that I find that's dear to my heart is trying to understand through compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So when something is happening, whether you're spaced out, whether there's a problem, whether someone's crying, whether someone's having a bad day, try and understand them compassionately. And you may not know. Like most people's problems come from even before they were even born. You know? They don't even know. But if you try and understand them, well, maybe they're having a rough time. And through that, you will have a relationship with them. You will be energetically connected with them, as opposed to thinking about how they are in a negative context or in a context that creates more separation. You can actually just be with them. Because that's what they want, is your attention, so they can overcome whatever obstacle they have. And this may be in a particular context that I'm making up here, but you know.
I find that very easy to do.
But again, the focus, though, in this context, the focus is on trying to understand. And when you practice, what's the Buddhist practice? Tonglen? Yeah, when you practice these types of practices, the breath is involved, right, in this practice, right? You're breathing in pain and suffering, you're exhaling the antidote. Is that correct?
My understanding, yeah.
Yeah. So in that practice, you're allowing yourself to feel and be with who you are with. Right now, you can relate to them as an infinite, you know, Buddha, a god. Or you can relate to them as a scumbag. You can, anyway. That's your choice in how you relate to them. But if you're doing both in terms of recognizing them and their humanity, and wanting to help them, that energetic exchange is creating a loving kind of bond. Right, and in that focused practice, the illusions go away, and then you start to see that God in everybody just by your own experience. It's not a mental activity. I don't think about like God in the context of.
I'm playing with you.
Well,
that's what you're here for.
I'm not sure I'm a clown, but could be.
Fools are the wisest of them all.
Any other questions?
When you spoke about fear and the arising of fear, I wasn't clear in your description. Are you creating a space in which that can arise and pass, and simply you put attention on it or did you actually suggest that there's an action to take with respect to the thing that arises?
I'm an action kind of guy. Other people might not be action kind of people. I'm an action guy. I like to, if I see a fear, I have practices out the wazoo to eliminate that fear. but simply seeing the fear and changing the thought pattern is helpful too.
And but that's an action.
True.
Changing the thought pattern
but,
is an action.
I like physical action though. Like, I like breath, I like movement, I like mantra, which engages the navel. So I like physical, because I like to connect the physical body with the spirit and the mind, because this is how you experience it. But a mental process for me is recognizing the fear, and if it's a genuine fear, maybe there's something to actually be aware of, like, you know, I shouldn't be riding the wrong way down the freeway kind of thing. That's, I have to change my actions to get rid of that fear. Like, you know, that...
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about. It's more the fear of some fear of expression or fear of being
judge,
out there.
Judge.
The breath. In that case, the breath is one of the most powerful ways to get over fear. When you're afraid, what happens to your breath?
It shortens.
Yeah.
It contracts.
So by consciously shifting the breath, you can consciously shift the emotion. And the emotion is just the messenger. It's not the message. Underneath the emotion is actually what's going on. I feel insecure about myself, blah, 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 blah. Then, you know, I've used positive affirmations to help transform those things, and I've used physical practices. They're actually like physical yogic practices that rechannel the energy and
yeah, and I think that's probably the root of my question is to impose a technology prematurely. Do you find that prematurely mean that there might be a root or a cause or a something to see by letting it be what it is that can get short-circuited if I immediately take action to create separation between me and that state?
Well, I don't want to stay any lower than I have to.
Why?
It's a habit that just doesn't serve. I mean, if I need to know why, then great, you know? But if I don't need to know why, then why bother? Like, certain practices, you don't need to consciously know. You could just do them and they go away. Like, most of these things are habits, right? You have something that's been planted in you, that something's wrong, or, you know, whatever, and it creates a subconscious program that you're running. Repatterning that program is what's most important. It's like, what do you want to feed? You want to feed your fears, or do you want to feed the reality of what you're capable of? And if you need to know why the fear is happening, then sure. Like, if there's something really legit under there, like, you know, Sikhs, we carry swords. Mm-hmm. For a reason. Why? Why do Sikhs carry swords? Jim, come on.
I don't know.
They're symbols.
Symbols of what?
Of dispelling fear, of cutting through the crap.
See? She's got a sword in her pocket. The sword represents truth, right? And it also represents self-preservation. And in the time of the Mughals, for the Sikhs, you know, people would be, their doors would be broken down and they would be murdered. You know, I used to have tons of fear. Picked up a sword one day and it vanished like in an instant. It was crazy. It was the most wildest thing ever. Just touched the sword. What?
Say that again.
I used to have a lot of fear in my life. And one day I put my hand on a sword and it vanished like that.
The fear.
Gone.
Not the sword.
The sword didn't vanish. My ego might have for an instant, but the sword didn't vanish. But you have to understand what fear is, right? Fear is an attachment, right? Now, this life is a gift. if you're fully engaged in your life and you feel like it could be taken away, that fear can be eliminated through self-empowerment. Now, I'll tell you a funny story. I went for a run in Regal Park, and I gave my wallet and the keys to my wife. And a man walked up to my wife and he says, "You're from New York, aren't you?" And she goes, "Why?" She says, "Because you leave your wallet in your car." Yeah, it's funny. Like, we create these false senses of security. And what you don't understand is underneath it is a fear that's running your underneath there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the whole culture is based on that, right?
Yeah.
American, get your little piece of the action and do everything to hold on to it that you can.
So if your fear is like that, like survival, like, you know, self-preservation, the underlying current is that you're running your own illusion. You have to learn to take care of yourself. That's the underlying current. When it comes to relationships, that's a self-esteem thing. That's a feeling like I deserve to be in this conversation. I deserve to be accepted for who I am as the unique being that I am, whether I have a turban on or, you know, my hat's on backwards or, you know, just being myself. That fear typically comes from your mom. I'll tell you. It could be reinforced, or, you know, whether it was your mom's direct relationship with you, or, no offense, Mom, or how she taught you to be in the world. Fathers have a little bit of an influence, but it's mostly the mother. How you relate in the world that creates those fears on how you socially are accepted and are in the world. And I always teach, and I always practice, I love my mother. All the things that she gave me, positive, negative, neutral, I appreciate her for what she did. And I think it's the most incredible thing. But the fact is, the mom is the most important, most influential being in a human being's life. She carries the child, she imprints the subconscious, and she teaches you how to be yourself. And when you have insecurities, you have to find a way to transform them. And that's through, in my experience, one of the best ways to do it is to reprogram it yourself. And it's really simple. Your mind is one of the most powerful things in the world. Instruct it. You have a choice. Either your mind runs your life, or you run its life. Now, you might say in a spiritual context, the mind is everything, and you go beyond. The fact is that the finite part of your mind, the brain, that experiences all this reality, has its own identity. And when you relate to that identity, relate it into a way where it's a part of you, and command it. That commanding is basically the reprogramming of your subconscious.
Yeah, I think the reason I'm asking the question is that the tradition that I practice myself has puts that in more in a couple of stages. There's definitely a stage for reprogramming, but there's a preparatory stage for just being, holding the space to be present to the arising of what's there, such that there's a sufficient context to actually be able to know what you actually want to reprogram. And that's It's a quibble. It's not a that's what I was trying to get at. Is
the breath is the way, in my experience, is the most powerful conveyor of messages. Fear is something that gets trapped in the lower chakras. First chakra, survival, feeling identity, feeling connected to the earth. That's all the way down here in your physical body. Feel your physical body, like, not like this, but yogically, when you clear your nadi channels, your energy channels, you have a greater sensitivity. But you can still feel, like, I feel my hips are tight. You know, my belly is constricted. You know, and then you get into the debate, did I eat gluten today? You know, or, you know, my chest is tight. You know, feel your physical body. And, like, when you're afraid, you'll feel your butt, your sphincter, and you'll feel your navel, which is where your emotions get stored. And what you do is you breathe. And when you breathe, if you want to contemplate what's going on, that's still, the breath is going to bring life to that chakra, and it's going to send messages back up to the brain, and it's going to help you relax. Because when you're afraid, you get tense, and when you get tense, you shut down the energy centers that are flowing through you, and you close off from what you're capable of. Now, it's my best thing with going on stage is breathing or walking. I use the bathroom as an excuse to go for a walk and calm my nerves. Right? It's getting the energy moving. So when you feel a fear coming up, you go for a walk and process it then, and then you can relax into it, journal about it. But the key is to get rid of it as quickly as possible. Like, I don't want to spend hours thinking about, you know, what happened, when, where, what, whatever. You know, it's all about service. It's all about getting out of your own head and your own thinking of something's wrong with me and getting into the true greatness of life. I mean, why waste time on your own suffering when you can serve so many people?
Yeah, I think that's the distinction that I can see what you're saying now, that what I was speaking of was not a process of contemplating or engaging or analyzing. It was more of a process of feeling the energy, which means going into the body and being present to the energetic formation. And in that presence and in that space, then the movement that you're describing actually takes place.
One of the things that I practice is coming back, bringing the attention back up to the upper chakras. No matter what happens in my daily routine, something happens, if someone brings me down to the navel, I got to bring that energy back up. Because if I respond from my own insecurities, if I respond, most of the problem is that you act and you behave from your own insecurities. This is the most common problem on the planet.
You said when somebody brings you down to your navel, so you're saying if you're down here, you're mostly in your fears? Or can you be there and not be settled like the...
Taking away the absence of a spiritual teacher relationship, mm-hmm. If someone puts you down and you feel bad about yourself, I don't want to go into this too far because then everybody would be thinking about the last time that somebody put them down, but your energy goes, your emotions go down into your stomach, right? And that energy, you start to...
Do you mean stomach literally or your gut?
Your gut. I mean, really, it's a little bit below your stomach, it's your gut. Yeah. But the fact is that this whole region represents your action in the world. It's what you can control. So when someone deflates you, right? We can have elevating conversations or we can have de-elevating conversations. Like, I sit here and lecture you till you're blue in the face and how wrong you are, and if I don't find a way to take you from there and bring you up there, then I haven't done my job. But the same thing happens for you in your daily life. If you're in a moment and someone tells you that you've just been stupid and awful and blah 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 and look at the way you walk and whatever, and you start to sink down physically, emotionally, it goes down. The change is when you recognize that and you pull yourself back up and say, that's not me. You don't participate in that own letdown. That's the practice, is bringing the energy back up and relating to that God self, that wisdom, whatever you want to call it.
I read a statement recently that troubled me, and I've been turning it over in my mind, and it is, men are afraid that women will laugh at them.
That's
women,
right.
Women are afraid that men will kill them.
I have not heard that one.
Yeah.
And it's a sad thing to think. What country was that in the United States then?
I don't remember where I read it, but it stayed with me because I think there's an element of truth in the fact that women are afraid that men will kill them. If you're walking down a dark street alone at night, you do have a certain fear that somebody may come out of the shadows and hurt you.
Or they'll kill you with words.
Well,
that's another kind of death.
Well,
I do notice walking down the street at times, a fair number of women that I can tell are turning away and giving fearful looks.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so.
Yeah.
Well, the fact is that women have been abused and injured in many cultures, especially this one.
And as to men are afraid that women will laugh at them, you were just going into that about the put downs of the things that really bring your ego up, tear your ego apart. And
which one do you want to talk about first?
I don't know. I just wondered what your thoughts might be on such a statement.
Women are
such a pair of statements.
Women are incredibly powerful. Women are. I couldn't even cover in a context of the time that we have, how powerful a woman is. But I could tell you that the influence of a woman is profound. Okay? When a woman speaks, it projects onto the mind of whatever she is projecting. And that impact is significant.
That can't be true. They're not physically powerful.
I had a conversation with one of my mother's best friends today. She just found out that she has cancer. And I called her up. She lives in Florida. And she said the nicest, sweetest things. I mean, it was like, I was almost crying just listening to her say such kind, wonderful things to me. I kid you not. I was just reflecting about how powerful this woman was. She's in Florida. She just found out that she's got an illness that, you know, that might take her life, and she's finding positive things to say about me. I'm telling you, it is powerful. It's very powerful. The influence of a woman is profound. And that's where you have to have a really strong conversation with yourself, so if a woman is really tough on you and doesn't build you up, that you can handle it. Right? There's no doubt about it. Now, I'm not going to get into women's rights and liberal and men and women are not equal. There's no doubt about it. Women are far more powerful and more intuitive and, you know, gifted. And I'm a guy, and I accept and appreciate that. But from a security standpoint, whoever wrote that, I don't know who it is. They probably are very insecure about their own physical security. And it's up to every woman to find a way to, you know, feel secure. And I'm not going to tell you that when I first walked in the door, I remotely thought about the positioning of how I was sitting. Right?
With your back to the tree.
Yeah, to the window.
I mean, you
might say...
That isn't a comfortable position.
It's you know, I taught a couple weeks ago, and it's the same thing. My back was in the bay window, and I said, "Look at me, it's okay." The fact is that we have a little bit of craziness in our world. So, and I'm not here to tell you to be afraid, because no, I want you to be empowered to take care of yourself. I mean, I walk down the street at night knowing that I can take care of myself. You know.
My daughter told me a story. She was walking down a dark street coming home late, and a big man grabbed her by the arm and said, "I'm going to rape you." Didn't use that final word. And she said, "You don't want to do that." And she said, "Do you live around here?" And he was taken aback. She said, "I know people that live in this neighborhood. Is this your neighborhood?" And she got him engaged in conversation. And then he let her alone. So that, to me, was an example of power, of cold, you know, of cool-headedness.
And compassion.
Well, in a way, yes. Yeah. She mm-hmm. treated him like a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And he responded to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice conscious move. Now there's another thing too, which is your emotional state is in your vibrational frequency. Which, what does that mean? You know, you've heard of horses know how you feel. Well, humans do on a certain level too. They might not be consciously aware of it or not. But, you know, I used to work on in the investment banking industry on Wall Street. And I used to do consulting, like business consulting. And senior level executives used to come ask me all these questions about their personal life and stuff like this. And I was like, it's pretty interesting. Like, you know, people trust me that much that they can just, you know, feel like, you know, they can ask me about their relationships. And I wasn't even like a term and seek at the time.
When you changed professions.
Yeah, I changed professions. But the point is that your vibration impacts the field of the people that you come in contact with. Now, if you feel capable, then you have less chance of having a conflict. Because when someone even has that thought, they usually decide that that's not the place I want to go. But security is the most important thing for a woman. And having that security is what a woman seeks, whether she's conscious of it or not. Physical security is one of them. So, you know, it's important to feel secure. Now, I think we're just about out of time. Is there one more question?
I've been trying to remember you said three words, and the first word was focus, the third word was dharma, and I'm trying to remember what the second word was.
Oh my gosh, now you're going to test my memory.
It was attitude.
The second one was attitude.
Oh, you're right. Oh, okay, good.
That's what
good.
I was
trying
to
remember. Attitude.
Attitude is your altitude. It's true. If you change the way you think, you will change the way you feel. Mm-hmm. Your attitude is all about that. That's the spirit of it. When you have the attitude of gratitude,
mm-hmm.
that's the highest place mm-hmm. to be.
And then dharma?
Dharma is right living. Now, I'm not going to tell you what that is for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's I live congruent and consistent and in harmony with my inner wisdom. I am calm and collected in that experience of that. That's something you have to know for yourself. And there's plenty of paths that teach different ways to experience that. Yes, sir.
I give a lot of attention to the relationship between word and silence, and I see the word itself as male and silence more as female, and I learned a while ago that when you put an S in front of word, you have sword. And so that the element of protection is really, really wrapped up in speech, I think.
Partially.
Okay. But it's very present. It's there. And a lot of language, I think, is learned, especially in the paradigm that we're in, is learned as a defense mechanism. Something about the way words are introduced when we're children. And just being in this space, it invites an exploration that's kind of like ongoing, and that holds me in this this wonderful exploratory space.
You're a learner.
A learner.
You all are learners.
We are.
When you have that in you, you have the ability to open to know. an experience. And if you lose that, you become ignorant. The other thing is that the word is in the silence. Mm. And it goes beyond both masculine and feminine. Mm. Mm. It's called the Akashic Record. So thank you for coming. It was really wonderful to meet you, and I think we have a few minutes to just chat, if you all want to.
Well, first let's express our thanks. We have a donation bowl over there. We hope you will contribute to that. And as you know, it's our custom to share that with our speakers to further their work. And by all means, let's have a connection. I don't know if there's if you have information that people can have to learn more about your teachings, but you can share that. I'm glad for that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, if you're curious about what I do, or we have events and concerts and stuff, then just ask me. I'll give you some information. And, yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.